president scratching his head. The economy is down. Wall Street about to lose him. I mean, up and down. Gas prices up and down. Nobody knows what to do. You know what we need, though?
Welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller. I'm sitting in for Ian Masters, and I'm joined now by John Bellamy Foster. John is editor of the Monthly Review, magazine, journal, whatever we might call it, and professor of sociology at the University of Oregon. His most recent books, they're both terrific, are The Great Financial Crisis, The Ecological Revolution, and his latest, which is with Robert McChesney, called The Endless Crisis, How Monopoly Finance Capital Produces Stagnation and Upheaval from the USA to China. Hello, John, and thank you for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about this new book that you've done with Bob, which is also published by Monthly Review Press, is it not?
Yes. Well, it's called The Endless Crisis, and what that refers to is what economists call stagnation. And everybody knows about the financial crisis, of course, that started in 2007, 2008, and really ended in some ways in 2009. That's when the recovery began in the United States, the economic recovery. But it's been a very, very slow recovery, and what we have is extremely, slow economic growth. And the same thing exists even worse in Europe and Japan. So economists and political economists, concerned analysts, have now switched from focusing on financial crisis exclusively, and now they're focusing on stagnation, that is, this problem of slow growth. And actually, the slow growth has been developing for a long time. Stagnation has been developing in some ways since the 1970s. The economy has been slowing down in the United States and then the other advanced capitalist economies, so that the growth rate in the 1960s was higher than in the 1970s, and in the 1970s it was higher than in the 1980s and 90s, and then the first decade of this century was even slower still, and now we're stuck in this slow growth phase. This means there's higher unemployment, excess capacity, and all the attendant problems, along with increasing inequality, and there's no clear way out of this.
Well, one of the things that
parameters of the kind of economy we have.
One of the things that you and Robert McChesney say in the book, John Bellamy Foster, is that in many ways this is not about a blip. It's not about a 2 or 3 year disaster. It's about a trend, and you actually date the trend in some ways, I think, even earlier than you're saying now, because you are using some of the very interesting work of Barron and Sweezy, other writers from the 30s through to the 90s, showing that in many ways even the Great Depression of the 30s is not a blip. It's not just a discrete event. It's part of a wider trend that you've identified along with other political economists, isn't it?
Yes. Well, the whole issue of stagnation rose in the 1930s. Basically, the problem of the Great Depression wasn't simply a problem of a very deep decline. I mean, there was the stock market crash in 1929, and then the economy went down in 1932. It hit 25% unemployment. But then the economy started to grow again, and they actually had a recovery for most of the 1930s. The problem was that the recovery was too slow, and then they got hit by another big recession in 1937, where the unemployment rate rose from 14% to 19%. And so they started to talk about stagnation. And, of course, Keynes was part of this. They started to talk about the problem of why advanced capitalist economies have so much trouble growing. They don't, that stagnation is actually the norm. It's the normal tendency of the system, and rapid growth is really an exception and is explained by special factors. And so we're building on that analysis. Comes from Keynes, but it also comes in from Marx.
Sure, and I mean a whole stack of other people, if you even look at a lot of classical economy writing, folks are very concerned about things like the propensity of profit to fall and so forth over time, and issues to do with so-called labor market efficiencies and whatnot. I wonder if you could tell us how this applies to other countries, because one of the topics you look at in the book is China. And of course, China is both, in a sense, a figure of lust and desire for the United States and Europe, at the same time as it is an object of dependency, isn't it? So what does the future hold for China, which has been able to utilize historically low wage rates, a gigantic reserve army of labor, and authoritarian political control to become a major player in the world economy?
Well, it's a complicated problem. We have a more globalized economy, so that when the advanced capitalist countries, the rich economies, the advanced industrial economies, slow down, this has effects on China too, because of course they're a very export driven economy, and they sell their goods mainly to rich economies. So their markets, their export markets, are drying up. They've depended very much on a low wage system, and the multinational corporations multinational corporations centered in the West are crucial in carrying out production in China, and especially assembly, and then exporting it to the West. And of course, Chinese wages are only a small fraction of the wages in the West, so this keeps prices down. But their export markets are drying up because of stagnation in the rich economies, and China's had a 10% rate of growth for quite a while now. That means that the economy doubles in size basically every 7 years. Well, our rate of growth, let's say the rate of growth in the rich economies is now a little over 1%, which means it doubles in size every 70 years. So so you have these very different rates of growth, but China's economy is slowing down very rapidly. And even though they have a high rate of growth by Western standards, it's creating enormous problems for their system. They can't absorb all this labor they have. They have a vast number of surplus workers, migrant laborers, and they can't absorb it. And the answer that's proposed is for them to increase their internal consumption. But they can't do that without raising wages, and they can't do it without interfering with this migrant labor system, which is crucial to their whole economic model.
Right, where people may be coming from the rural north to be involved in manufacturing assembly in the south. Now, one of the other things you identify in the book, very tellingly, John Bellamy Foster, your book, The Endless Crisis with Robert McChesney, is that it's not just about comparative labor costs. That's not the only factor that makes the West limp along anemically in economic growth terms by contrast with China. It's also this word that you've utilized, that others have coined, but you draw on extensively in this wonderful new book, financialization. Can you tell us a bit about what financialization is?
Well, you know, there's a lot of different views of financialization. I mean, it basically means the shift of the economy, the shift of the center of the gravity of the economy from production to finance. And this has been understood for a long time. In fact, the thinkers that we rely on very heavily, Harry Magduff and Paul Sweezy, started to analyze this process of financialization in the 1970s. They analyzed it on a very steady basis, and they saw it as arising out of the tendency towards stagnation, the slowdown of the economy. Basically, the profit margins of corporations are quite high because of particularly the more monopolistic or oligopolistic corporations. They have high profit margins, and so they have a great deal of surplus or savings at their disposal. But there's always a problem of effective demand. There's always a problem of final consumption, because the advanced capitalist countries tend to have market saturation, and there's a problem of investment because there tends to be, under this system, a lot of excess industrial capacity, and you don't want to invest in new plants and equipment if you have a lot of plants and equipment that's idle. So the system doesn't work very well, and the big problem is that there's more surplus available to the corporations than they are able to find profitable outlets for in production. And so increasingly what's happened is that they've poured this surplus capital into the financial sector. That's basically into speculation. And this has been made possible through the role of the state as the lender of the last resort, propping up the financial sector again and again. Every time a bubble is about to burst, the state tries to intervene and prop up the financial sector. So we've had something that we've never seen before in history, a shift towards finance within the economy that's been going on, that's happened over decades, and accompanying stagnation. And the problem keeps on getting worse and worse. Even with this latest financial crisis, they didn't really let the bubble burst fully. They didn't let the system go. They propped it up. And so we still have this same problem of a bloated financial system on top of a slow-growing economy. The financial system is basically debt and credit and debt, and it's primarily in the form of private debt and not government debt. Government debt is a relatively minor factor in this. So we have a system that doesn't work very well on the level of production and tries to lift itself through finance and speculation.
Now, speaking of this issue of growth and the lack of growth, John Bellamy Foster, one of the other things you're renowned for is being one of the canaries that we have in thinking about ecological issues. In other words, you're not just one of these people who is a prophet and profit, as it were, of growth. You want to think about issues of sustainability as well, and not just sustainability in conventional bourgeois economic terms, but sustainability in terms of the climate of the earth. So where does that play into all of this?
Well, it's very complicated. I've just finished an article, The Planetary Emergency, which is going to come out in month review in the December issue. In fact, it'll be out online on the first, but it's a very difficult problem because ecologically, economic growth is a problem. Well, the system is stagnating, and we have all of these problems of unemployment and poverty and all the manifestations of a failed growth economy that is hurting people so much. Economic growth is actually bad for the environment. This kind of failed growth economy isn't exactly good for the environment, this sort of slow growth economy, because we tend to, as growth slows down, we tend to pull out all the environmental regulations and environmental stops, and so we tend to be even more vicious towards the environment if we're having a problem of getting growth going. But right now, it's very clear in terms of climate change. The latest science is out. If you read, let's say, the latest issue of Nature Climate Change, the September issue at any rate, there's an article by Kevin Anderson, one of the leading climate change scientists. And he's basically, it's clear now that we can't avoid the 2 degrees Celsius threshold, which scientists refer to as the point of irreversibility or the point of no return. That's, if we get there, then we can no longer go back. Mitigation is over, and all we can try to do is to adapt to an increasing environmental catastrophes. And so scientists are terrified by this, and it's clear now, the mathematics of it are really clear, that we can't avoid hitting 2 degrees Celsius unless we shift the economy into a zero growth mode, and that's what they're saying in the scientific community now. Well, I mean, this is impossible under capitalism. We've really reached a point where capitalism has got us into this trap of stagnation, financialization, and going over the ecological precipice, and we've really got to make changes quickly now.
Wise words. I thank you for joining us, John Bellamy Foster.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with John Bellamy Foster, who is editor of the excellent magazine Monthly Review. He mentioned that he has a new article coming out that will be available online in a day or so. In addition, John is professor of sociology at the University of Oregon. His latest book with Robert McChesney is called The Endless Crisis: How Monopoly Finance Capital Produces Stagnation and Upheaval from the USA to China. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back speaking with Andre Dorce Ramos about what the new sexenio in Mexico may bring to the media landscape and associated topics. Don't touch that dial.